Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From One World Trade Center in Manhattan, this is the New Yorker Radio Hour, a co-production of WNYC Studios and the New Yorker.
Welcome to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. Every year, Townsend Harris High School in Queens, New York, runs an election simulation, a giant civics lesson where the school recreates the ecosystem of a real political campaign. And some seniors get to play versions of the actual candidates for president.
Good morning. I'm Elizabeth Warren, and I'm running for president because I've seen the corruption and greed that fills our government. What business as usual?
Some host their own version of Meet the Press.
Today, we have invited to our show Kamala Harris. Can you tell us about your perspective on same-sex marriage?
The students make political advertisements which often have a distinctly Queens sound.
Joe Biden, no more tax cuts, tell a friend, clean energy, bring it in, I'll be your new president.
Yeah.
And then the whole school gets to vote. The New Yorker's Josh Rothman first visited Townsend Harris in 2015. The school then was grappling with how a teenage boy was going to portray the unorthodox campaign of someone named Donald Trump. And when he imitated Trump a little too authentically, the school almost called the whole thing off. Josh is going back to Townsend Harris as they're running their version of the 2020 primaries. And we'll meet a young man trying to portray Trump without getting sent to the principal's office.
There's some recent allegations as early as this morning. Remember, you can't impeach a winner because winners win. That's our job, all right? Keep that in mind as you vote this election season.
And we'll meet the rest of the candidates, including a 17-year-old rapping Pete Buttigieg.
They say, yo, Pete, where you been at? I'm just winning with these. I've been crushing at the polls, that's why GOP on me. I've been through with speaking for y'all, pass me Trump C. But no, Biden's making TikToks and not taking the lead. We need changing, 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 gotta check me a vote. I got LGBT rights and I'm a legalized dope.
America, we'll bring you the primary results from Townsend Harris High School as they develop on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
Bo Buddha judge trying to be your prez. I'm not like other Dems, just some airheads.
In the winter of 2007, a songwriter by the name of Justin Vernon returned to the Wisconsin woods not far from where he grew up. Just a few months later, he emerged with For Emma, Forever Ago. His first album produced under the name Bon Iver. Since then, Vernon and various bandmates have released three more records and won two Grammys. Perhaps most strangely, the bearded Wisconsin songwriter also became a frequent collaborator of Kanye West. The New Yorker's Amanda Petrusich spoke with Vernon at the New Yorker Festival, along with Brad Cook and Chris Messina, who worked on Bon Iver's recent album, I.
So, a lot of people, I think, first came to know you, Justin, as kind of a dude with a guitar, but in recent years, you've become something of a master collaborator. It seems to me that one of the central tensions of Bon Iver is that kind of push-pull between the individual and the collective. So do you think of Bon Iver as a band? Is it a more kind of fluid enterprise?
It's never been nailed down for me. You know, if anything, it's the closest I feel to a true way to describe it is it's like a little town that's growing, you know, ever and ever, forever and ever. And it did kind of start out with just me. But I'm always kind of constantly thinking about how you're never really alone. When you are physically alone, you got there vis-a-vis the people that you know, made you who you are. And so in a way, I think when I thought of that name, Bon Iver, when it was just me playing the music, I did imagine a town, a community, so to speak, and so that's the closest I get to naming the thing.
So, as a Bon Iver nerd, my sense of how you guys work is that it's somewhat modular. You're kind of building a song from pieces in the studio, and I'm curious. And this is a question for all three of you: how you know when a song is done?
Yeah, I definitely think there's times where half the room thinks a song might be done, and the other half doesn't, and that could be years that it goes on. but I think what we ultimately figured out is it's a feeling. And I think, like, at least for the three of us, it was a pretty simple litmus test about, like, were we all psyched on the song? Did we all feel like this was moving us at the core? And we left Texas feeling pretty confident. We still readdressed a few little things, but I think that's all it can be with this, is that because I think the way that Justin writes includes so much possibility from source material, for example, you know, we just got to, like, find whatever the common emotion is, and then we sort of go from there and, you know, ultimately make room for the voice, however that happens.
Yeah, looking at each other in the eye and being like, is it good? And then Chris would usually be like, no.
Chris, is that true? Are you the kind of control group?
I suppose so, yeah. I mean, I'm not always right. But,
Chris is the most respectable officer on the force.
An incredible record.
So For Emma, through the new record, I think is one of the most masterful four album runs I can think of, and also indicative, in my opinion, of a really extraordinary range in terms of style, tone, and sound. And I wonder, and again, this is a question for all three of you, do you think about genre? I mean, either as listeners or as, you know, performers, producers, is that kind of figure into your experience of music, kind of questioning what genre is this, or even interrogating yourself in terms of what genres you are drawn to?
I've never liked genres. I mean, I got to meet Quincy. We got to meet Quincy Jones, and maybe consciously we do try to screw things up a lot to just, like, shake loose any sort of, you know, somebody staring at you, feel like they're gonna melt a laser hole through your brain or something because they're expecting you to do something. But I don't think we don't want that.
Yeah. So there's a song on the new record that's effectively titled Shittiest Day in American History. And there are a few other tracks that allude to the national condition, to climate change, to our president. I'm curious, as, you know, songwriters and producers, sort of how much politics you're kind of comfortable allowing into the room. Because I think it's a balance a lot of artists are struggling with right now, kind of how big of a, you know, how much space you should give those ideas.
It's so tough. You know, got in a argument with, name dropping Kanye now, but got in a big argument, you know, with him about it. You know, I was willing to listen to a certain point, and then I just wasn't, because I ran out of patience. And I think we run out of patience sooner than we'd all like to think. And it's amazing to me that people that I, you know, agree with mostly would be, you know, more on the left. And I feel like it's, you know, people with empathy. But when you're looking at the right side, or the side that I look at and I always imagine to be, you know, evil or something, to not go there, to not approach with, like, pure love and empathy, you're going to be in a battle. But then again, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to have that much patience. I don't know how to get not angry. And I'd like to be better at that personally. But, I mean, as a musician, you can sing about it and you can emote about it and feel about it. I mean, being open to understanding that we aren't right, I think, is probably our best bet. And certainly writing songs is a vulnerable place to be in, to start.
So, I mean, lyrically, Justin, I feel like your work tends to, you know, completely resist narrative extrapolation. You often aren't telling traditional stories, or at least you're not telling them in traditional ways. And I think your language is really beautiful, and it's really evocative, and it's complicated. And I'm curious how you write lyrics, sort of what the process is. Do you keep a notebook? Is it more spontaneous and improvised?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a lot of that, a lot of trying to improvise something into existence that will exist forever. Sometimes you also got to just work, you know. It took some pretty firm hand holding of Brad, because there's just big giant holes, or I'd be like, no, I think that's it. I don't know why. I don't even know what those words are, if they are words, but we need to keep it. But just to have the, you know, you have to put in the work, and it isn't easy. You know, I just started writing in a notebook again instead of my computer, just to get, it's much less distraction. So you're always tweaking it, I guess.
There,
but
there was a typewriter at one point.
I was trying to be like retro, yeah. It's like a romance thing. It's like, I'm a writer, I better have like a Smith and Corona.
I think the million lyrics came out on there.
Oh yeah, the million lyrics did come out on the typewriter. Hot.
Worth every penny.
$20 probably.
All million of them.
I should add one more little detail that's kind of a context clue. Is that invention of words too is it's part of the fabric of at least Justin, but our friendship, and that we used to play Scrabble and just completely not use actual words. The only rule, and this was stone cold serious, the only rule is you just had to confidently define whatever your word was.
We got one quick word we have to share. Was Brad's word scunlit. S-C-U-N-L-I-T.
Looks gross on paper.
It looks gross, but... And we asked him through tears of laughter what the definition of scunlit was, and he just looked at me dead in the eyes. He says, it's a group of motorcycle dudes ripping a 180 at one time in a parking lot.
Just got to go there.
Right, rip a scunlit, boys.
Scunlit.
It's very Shakespearean. So, Justin, I, too, am a very big Northern Exposure fan. I'm holding for applause. There's no Northern Exposure fans. I had to resist making this entire Q&A about the series, but I have to ask you, while we have a minute left on the clock, what are your thoughts about the reboot?
There's a reboot?
I can't believe I'm telling you this news.
I've signed at least 5 online petitions, and I didn't know. When did this happen?
You made it happen, apparently. They have announced this year that they are, you know, circling the wagons. There's going to be a new
season. I'm
not
going to say I'm worried.
Yeah.
I am a little worried about that, but also uncontrollably excited. I mean, that's where the name of the band comes from. If you don't know, I was watching an episode. It's called First Snow, and it's like the whole episode is like not people going on a diet, like eating a lot of pie and pancakes to like, well, got a carbo load for the winter, and I just like, that's my people. And then every year for the first snow, they walk out and they greet each other and they say Bon Iver, and I just was like, that's it, that's me, that's my town, that's my upbringing, that's where I exist. It's my favorite. It's like, I wouldn't call it my favorite TV show. It's my favorite thing ever. It just speaks to me so deeply.
We have time to hear some music. So before we leave the stage, I just want to thank you guys so much for coming.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The New Yorker's Amanda Petrusich speaking with Justin Vernon of Bon Iver, along with his co-producers Brad Cook and Chris Messina. Stick around for a live performance from the band in just a moment. This is the New Yorker Radio Hour.
Hi, I'm Roz Chast from The New Yorker. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by NetSuite. Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on delivering your product or service, the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified platform. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/New Yorker. netsuite.com/New Yorker.
WNYC Studios is supported by Rocket Money. Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/WNYC. That's rocketmoney.com/WNYC.
I'm David Remnick, and this is the New Yorker Radio Hour. This hour, we've been hearing conversations recorded at the New Yorker Festival in October. And before we go, we've got a live performance by the band Bon Iver, led by singer-songwriter Justin Vernon.
It's okay, my laptop isn't...
There she blows. Just gotta take it out, plug it back in.
We gotta wait for the laptop to turn back on anyways.
Okay.
Real pro.
Part of being a professional songwriter is that you can enter the teleprompter stage of your career. If I'm serious, we are gonna have to wait a second. Sorry.
No, I know, just trying to give you like a lounge piano intro.
It's super working. This is Jen, by the way, everyone. Jen Wozner. There are the lyrics that I don't know. Thank you.
half of Florida. Well, I thought that this was half of love. No, follow to the rising sea. Well, I thought that this was half of love.
Thanks, y'all. Thanks again for this whole experience. This is really different and fun. And if you do too many interviews, you can start to lose your mind. But this was an excellent one, and Amanda's so great. We want to leave you with this thing. We've been leaving the last show we play in the encore. By the way, encores are weird, right? We should just call them what they really are, is pee breaks. We assume that we're going to get an encore because everyone always gets an encore, it seems. That's not being self-diminishing, but we, at the end of the night, we like to play this song. I hope you enjoy it. It's the last song on our record, and it's kind of what we were talking about earlier. I think it's got all the stuff in it. Thank you.
a weight list like a weightless beast. So what is it we don't teach? When we were children, we were helpmen. Or we were oblivious at least. But now it comes to mind, we are terrified. So we run and hide for a verified little piece. So what of this release? So what of this release? Some life feels good now, don't it? Think I need it. How did ever leaving plan have to let? But something's gotta ease your mind. Well, it's all fine. Well, it's all crime anyway. Sifting fistfuls through the green, every which way could be seen. It was the sand in time, more like Panama, more like anodyne, was a friend of mine. You'd have known, you'd have known. I could profit, I could ride by. However, everywhere isn't everywhere. This is not a veil or a fairy tale in the least. So what of this release? So what of this release? Some life feels good now, don't it?
Thank you all so very much. And thanks for supporting us. I'll see you, okay? Thank you.
That was Bon Iver, Justin Vernon, accompanied by Sean Carey, Jen Wassner, and Mike Lewis. And they performed at the New Yorker Festival in October. Their recent record is called I, I'm David Remnick, and thanks for listening. Please join us next week on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Merrill Garbus of Tune Yards, with additional music by Alexis Quadrado. This week's episode was produced with help from Rhonda Sherman and David Ohana of The New Yorker Festival, along with Bill Moss, Duke Marcos, and Sandy Whitesell. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, art, politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.